The court will proceed to the third case of the day, Chow versus the International Brotherhood, Local 743. Mr. Warman?
Good morning, Your Honors. Mr. Oswald, may it please the court, I am Noah Warman on behalf of the appellant, Teamsters Local 743. The issue before you is fairly succinct, although my sentence may be a little long. It's whether the Secretary of Labor had the authority to issue an investigatory subpoena ducis tecum under the LMRDA, the Labor Management Reporting and Disclosure Act, to investigate Title IV issues where there was no completed election, and those issues, therefore, would have arisen only under Title I. First, let me address the issue of that election. In 2004, Local 743 conducted its triennial officers' election. It does so by mail ballot. The union has in excess, I believe, of 10,000 members. The ballots came back. They were to be counted on October 16. A non-incumbent candidate named Richard Berg filed a protest complaining about how the ballots had been disseminated and demanded that a new election be held as a result of the problems with the ballot distribution. The union received that protest on the 16th, a Saturday, after unchallenged ballots had been counted. But the challenged ballots, which would have been dispositive of the outcome of the case, were not to be resolved and then opened and counted until the 19th. On the 18th, the union's executive board, before there was a complete tally, granted Mr. Berg's protest, gave him entirely the relief he sought, directed a new election. And that was conducted by the American Arbitration Association and concluded December 2004. After that election concluded, the Department of Labor conducted an investigation of the October round of balloting, which led to the February 2005 subpoena, which in turn led to my appearance before you today. In that subpoena, the Department of Labor, the Secretary's agent for the purposes of the investigation, requested three categories of information. And it's the union's contention that that subpoena exceeded the Secretary's authority under Section 601 of the LMRDA. It implicated solely Title I rights, particularly the right to vote, to cast a meaningful vote that could have been enforced by members as a Title I matter. And that in light of the timing of the subpoena, particularly with respect to the December election and with respect to the material sought in the February subpoena, the Secretary acted arbitrarily. Let me turn first to an issue raised by the Secretary, that is, the standard of review. The union submits that one of the cases cited by the Secretary supports de novo review. In order for this court to quash the subpoena, it could find that the subpoena was not issued within the scope of the Secretary's statutory authority. That is an issue purely of law. And under the EEOC versus United Airlines decision, of this court, I believe from 2002, that issue is reviewed by you de novo. We submit that the issue here is primarily one of law, the scope of the Secretary's subpoena authority. To start with, the express language of 601 in and of itself states that the Secretary has the right to issue an investigative subpoena where she believes that a violation of the LMRDA has occurred or is about to occur, with one notable exception, and that involves Title I. Why that's important in this particular case, in this particular subpoena, is that this subpoena addresses election rights, voting rights in particular, members' voting rights. For in the subpoena itself, Category 2, the Secretary seeks information about members and their eligibility to vote in the October 16, 2004 election. The election was never conducted. As the Supreme Court has held in Crowley, election-related rights, members' rights, can arise under Title I or Title IV. In this case, where there was no tally of ballots, there was no election concluded, these are purely Title I rights that are beyond the scope of the Secretary to investigate. Had there been a final tally at that point in time, with or without regard to a member's complaint, then the Secretary of Labor could have issued the investigatory subpoena. Prior to the tally, none could issue.
How long a time period does an election normally take? Or how much time is allowed, Mr. Warman, for an election?
Roughly 30 to 45 days. It's not precise in every election, from the campaigning, the mailing out of the ballots. Members are usually given a substantial period of time in order to vote and return the ballots, and then you have the count at that point in time. And there's also a challenge process. Throughout this process, candidates such as, for instance, Richard Burke, have the right to protest and file complaints, which may be internally remedied by the union, which is another reason why this matter should not have been investigated by the secretary, why this action on her part was arbitrary, and why this subpoena exceeded her authority. Because one of the principles underlying the LMRDA is this notion of union self-correction, that where a violation of the LMRDA is brought to the union's attention prior to the tally of ballots by a candidate such as Mr. Burke, the union can self-correct. I believe this comes from the glassblowers case of the Supreme Court, several other decisions, appellate and at the district level. In this case, the system worked as it was supposed to. The notion that the union can self-correct was followed here. I should note on that front, one of the issues raised by the secretary is the concept, hypothetical in this case, that a union, by consistently granting an appeal and directing a rerun election, could somehow extend the incumbent's grip on power and essentially evade the secretary's investigation. I submit that's not the case for two reasons. In this particular case, there was an undisputedly completed December election. Had the secretary issued the subpoena in conjunction with an investigation of that election, I believe the legal issue that we raised on appeal is moot, because there the secretary would have undisputedly had a completed election and Title IV authority. However, even as Judge Gettleman found in his order, this investigation concerned October, the never completed round of balloting.
What is the authority for the argument that you seem to be making, which is that the subsequent election, which was unilaterally held by the union as a remedy for the complaint that was made about the first one, somehow insulates the first one from any inquiry by the secretary?
Oh, that's not an argument I'm advancing, Your Honor.
Well, that's what I'm hearing.
No, the subpoena could be issued, and at that point, to the extent that Local 743 would have a dispute, it would be relevance, but it would not be the legal authority of the secretary to investigate the completed union election. By that I mean, were the secretary to claim that, for instance, a union business agent had been campaigning improperly on union time at an employer's facility, and that affected the December election, even though that conduct took place in October, that would be something that the secretary would have the lawful authority to investigate, but only in conjunction with the December election, not in conjunction with the terminated round of balloting. So I'm not saying that the matter would never be investigated or addressed by the secretary, that there's some sort of categorical shield. It's an issue of timing, not of substance.
Well, as I understand this investigation, it's an inquiry into the entire course of conduct, and the subpoena is seeking records related to the earliest part of that course of conduct, and that's what you're refusing to turn over.
I believe that was the material has been turned over to the Secretary of Labor at this point in time. The problem is...
I'm sorry, you've complied with the subpoena?
Yes, ma'am. We moved for a stay both before Judge Gettleman in this court, and that was denied.
Okay.
So the union has complied at this point in time. It's my understanding that does not, however, moot the issue before the court at this time. But turning to the course of conduct, there was no October election. By definition, a member's right to vote would arise only under Title I and be beyond, at that time, beyond the secretary's investigatory authority.
Well, as a matter of fact, there was an election. It's just that the counting of the ballots was terminated because of the complaint, and then the election was rerun.
But
the legal effect of that earlier election might be in question, but as a matter of the factual record, which is being investigated here, there was an election.
Correct, Your Honor, but the point is that the secretary stated that she was investigating October, as Judge Gettleman found. It was not the course of conduct of the December election. Had it been, had the subpoena come and been tied to the December election, my Title I argument, putting aside arbitrariness and relevance, would be moot, because then she would be investigating material in conjunction with an already completed election. But this particular subpoena addresses solely voting rights in the context of a never-concluded election, and therefore those matters can only arise under Title I. Essentially, our argument is there's a binary distinction. The members' voting rights arise pre-election solely under Title I, at the point of the voting tally solely under Title IV. As I understand the Department of Labor's, the Secretary's argument, there's overlap. But we believe that the language of the statute is much more crystal clear.
I haven't looked at the subpoena itself, but does the face of the subpoena indicate that the investigation that the Secretary is engaged in is limited to the October election?
If I may, Your Honor. It's, I believe, at page 40 of the appendix to which we filed, and thereafter. The document itself, dated February 24, 2005, all it states is essentially the text of Section 601. Then, when you go to the next page, there's many, many pages. There's many hundred, under 400 union members listed out. But the three categories of information, 2 and 3, both address voter eligibility for the to cast a vote in the October 16, 2004 election. And then thereafter, in the process of clarifying what it was they were investigating, even as Judge Gettleman noted in the order from which we've appealed, they were investigating October, not the December election. And if I may, reserve time for rebuttal.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Warman. Mr. Oswald.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Counsel. Mr. Warman presents a very nice take on what actually happened in this case. This case is not about differences between Title I and Title IV. This case is about the Secretary of Labor being able to do its job to make sure that unions are freely and fairly and democratically held. If you look at the statute that we're talking about here, it's in terms of, it talks about the Secretary has the authority to look at these situations in terms of what she thinks is necessary to investigate. It's a very broad authority, and it also gives her the ability to get information when she deems it necessary, is the language. It's a very broad scope. It's a very broad mandate, because the Secretary of Labor is the body in our government that is expert on these matters. Clearly, unions belong to their members, but they belong to the incumbents, and they belong to the people that are challenging the incumbents. The Secretary of Labor plays an important role in trying to do that. And in terms of union elections, it's clear, and all of the cases hold that have been cited here, that under Title IV, on union elections, the Secretary of Labor has extremely broad authority. Mr. Warman, in their brief, they attempt to draw this distinction between Title I and Title IV. That really isn't what this case is about. The case is about the edict that is given to the Department of Labor is to look into these cases, to investigate, and if she does nothing other than file a report or consider filing a report, she has the ability to get at the information.
Well, there's potential for abuse there, isn't there? I mean, if there's an investigation that's going on, Mr. Oswald, and a secretary, for whatever reason, she wants to exercise her discretion, and the election involves, as is often the case, incumbents seeking to retain, isn't there a stigma associated with in the midst of an election that can affect the incumbent's capacity for re-election, in effect? That there's a challenge to the during the course of the election, and as a second part, what is to be lost waiting for even let's say 45 days to get the results?
Because what happened in this case, Judge, and generally speaking, there might be the potential that somebody in some situation could be abused. It's not in this case.
I'm not saying it is. I'm talking about an administration that maybe have a view of labor management relations or whatever what you're arguing for is that any time a secretary, I suppose on some minimal probable cause, I don't know what you would use as the baseline under 521, but or the threshold, I should say, but you want to empower a secretary to have basically unreviewable power to intervene in any union election because of whatever the suspicion she has about it.
I think the district court applied the right standard in this case, and I'm not saying in every situation. There couldn't be a situation where the secretary is harassing someone and is doing this in a certain situation. I agree, Your Honor. There would be a limitation. If you could find out that the secretary is out just harassing labor unions and trying to do that, that's not what happened in this case.
Well,
and that's not what the district
court. You have a secretary,
found.
For example, who comes to office with a decided view that this particular union's 50-year history is not as shiny as he or she would think it ought to be, and therefore is going to monitor every local election for a period of 18 months, based only on a historical record that union had a troublesome history, let's say. Now, maybe that's all right in your view. I just want to make sure that I understand the Secretary's view of the scope of this authority.
I think we think that it's broad, and I think that we do agree that there would be limitations on it if we would be engaged in harassment. But if you're talking about investigating...
I'm saying harassment. I'm trying to read the statute and against the... You know, when you look at the legislative history here, it's not the clearest going back to the late 50s, and if we are to look at legislative history. But when you just look at the statute, I understand your position of how broad the language is, I guess, but I think there is something to the Title I, Title IV distinction. That's all.
I understand what Your Honor's, I think, driving at. I hope, but the Title I distinction is those are union members' rights. Those are rights that the union member has when he's running for an election, that he gets access to, that he's a candidate and he can run as a candidate and he can do these things as a candidate. The Title IV rights are what the Department of Labor does when they're supervising the elections. And if they're sitting there and harassing somebody, and they're sitting there forcing something down, but we didn't harass. All we asked for documents to look into a complaint that had been filed by a union member. And Judge, when you have a complaint that's filed in January, and they issue a subpoena in February, and it says, please give us these records. Please just, we want to look into this. And they said, go pound sand. We don't have to do it because we didn't do the union election. And in this case, it's really egregious, Judge, because what they did in terms of stopping this election is exactly the conduct that the challenger is claiming is the thing that screwed him out of the election. Because what he's saying is I was ahead in this election, and there were rulings that were done by the election officer. And the fact is that you then sat there and knew you were going to lose. And that's in the appendix, Judge, in terms of at page 19 through whatever, in terms of his complaint. And he says, I was ahead, and the only reason you stopped this election is because you knew I was going to win. Now you're going out, you'll get your ducks in a row, and the next time I come up, you'll beat me. But this is not what, and that was a very, very contested election. It was very much thrashed out, and all we wanted were the documents. It isn't.
Would your position be the same, Mr. Oswald, if this was just a voter as opposed to a voter candidate?
In terms of this complaint.
Yeah, let's say a complaint just is registered with the secretary that there's a belief that, take Mr. Berg's beliefs and just shift him to a rank-and-file member.
I think that the case law would say that's out there is that the secretary has the ability to look into things that they think look fishy. If they think there's merit to the case and there's merit to the complaint, that looks fishy to them.
In any large union, and let's use 10,000 as...
This is a pretty large one.
Pretty large union.
Right.
I would guess perhaps the secretary receives at least a single complaint from a rank-and-file member on a regular basis.
Right.
Now, my inquiry is that going to be a sufficient triggering mechanism? Let's say even a good faith, but without much basis, but a good faith belief by a rank-and-file member that things aren't too shiny in the process that's going on. Your position would be that a secretary could take one member out of a 10,000-member union and use that as a basis to investigate during the course of the election.
I think they could, and I think that's why the statute says the Secretary of Labor has the expertise in these matters. They get wacko complaints, Judge. They get people that are filing complaints with them, and they don't look into, they don't go and issue subpoenas. I mean, this isn't in the record. But there are all kinds of complaints that are filed. They have the ability to do in their expertise what looks to be fishy.
Well,
in
I'm
this case,
I'm thinking of a situation where we have, let's say, a write-in complaint by 50 members, stimulated by one member. So it gains some weight in the secretary's view, or the secretary's designee who's examining the election. And I'm just trying to see where the balance is here, because you're arguing for incredible power for the secretary to intervene during the course of the election, when legislative history suggests there was some real tension in the enactment of this in the late 50s of this issue.
I agree with that, Judge. But again, not that I'm saying that we necessarily would have, we didn't interfere in the election itself. The election that we're talking about here is October.
Right.
Their actions meant that it was run in December. The complaint was filed by the union member in January. We issued the subpoena in February. We weren't trying to interrupt in terms of this. We're trying to do our job to say somebody comes up with a complaint, and it looks to us, in our expertise, that this is something that should be looked into and that somebody should take a look and find out. I mean, perhaps the investigation will say the union did nothing wrong. This is the model of union democracy. That's something the secretary can do within her reporting authority. Or you could say there's something happened here, and if nothing else, you could issue a report and say this is something rotten. There's something rotten in Denmark here. They've been caught with their hand in the cookie jar, and they're sitting here saying, now, not only can you not hold me responsible for my hand being in the cookie jar, but also my parent, don't even question me why my hand is in the cookie jar, because you're inducing too much parental authority into our household. I don't think that makes any sense. And in this situation, when you're sitting there saying, well, all we want to do is look at it and investigate it. It's not that we're making conclusions about it. We have other litigation, which is obvious from the briefs in terms of some of the other issues that are involved in this case. But to sit here and to draw lines between Title I and Title IV and when this complaint, what that deals with, it's not what the statute requires, nor do I think it was abused in any way in this situation. And if it would be harassment, that would be one thing. But the Secretary of Labor has an important role in making sure that the playing field is fair for everybody and making sure that the rules are being followed. And that's why we issued the subpoena, and that's why we would ask that this appeal be dismissed and the judgment of the district court be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Austin. Mr. Warming, your time has expired, but I'd like to ask you a question. And you may have a minute besides. Is there a situation where you could envision the secretary moving before the election is completed?
Yes, sir. There would be. Other provisions in Title IV do not require or posit the completion of a union election.
But what provisions in IV would do that?
For example, I believe there's a...
Well, give me a factual setting, I guess, is what I'm looking for.
One factual setting may actually be the first one that they raised. Did a union officer receive improper support from the union and or an employer while running? That is...
So a single member writes a complaint alleging that, a rank-and-file member, not a candidate member, to the secretary, just alleging what you've suggested as an improper support, you would say the secretary then could issue a subpoena based on that allegation?
Theoretically. Taylor to investigate that issue. Just, if I may succinctly address three quick points. Title I involves members' rights. These are voting rights at issue, certainly in Categories 2 and 3 in the subpoena. Those members have every self-interest to enforce their own rights, and in this case, Mr. Berg did. Second, with respect to rerunning this particular election, the individuals who made that decision themselves were ahead in the polling. They voted against their self-interest. And as Judge Hibbler found in the related Title I litigation, no one knows how this election would have come out. Turning to the last point, efficiency. One of the reasons that we challenged this subpoena was that there were two investigations. They investigated the October scenario. They questioned the officers. They subpoenaed documents. after the December election. Why could this not have all been consolidated? So our officers had to go through it again and go through the same process with the December election. That's the one that Mr. Oswald alluded to. Our issue is wait until the completion of the election and consolidate the investigation. It's not that they can never conduct their investigation. It's that they have to do it in a proper and timely manner. And that was not done in this case. And for that reason, we respectfully request that the subpoena be quashed. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thanks, Warren. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The court